Hello, Greg and fellow fans of THC. My username is Lisa Marie on the HigherSideChats.com website, and I won some money bomb. I am from Arkansas and currently live in rural Arkansas. I like to write poetry and take photographs with my old 35mm camera. I have a husband of 18 years and we have a 14-year-old son. I woke up from being sheepish after separation from my enslavement with a multinational monster wireless company last December. I cashed in my 401k, threw out the TV, and began working on my deprogramming. That job almost killed me. Now I clean hotel rooms for the exercise and minimum wage. Nobody at that job realizes I am a college grad, and it doesn't matter. I have more time for my family, I pay a lot less taxes, and my son is homeschooled now. So that is why I will use the people's money toward mortgage 100%. Boy, did I need it. I love the subscription and the money bomb. It is the best deal in town. I dig all your topics. I love Freeman Fly and now Jamie Henshaw too, so I hope they will be on. Also, we are being chemtrailed hard, so any discussion about what is being sprayed would be interesting. I look forward to every broadcast. Thanks.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Here we go, our side chatters, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke from sunny San Diego. I'm Greg Carlwood. We heard from the last Money Bomb winner before the intro. Congrats to her, and thanks to everyone who's keeping that program alive, along with THC Plus. It really means a lot. And today is such a great show, a solution show, one of my favorite types, where we graduate from the basic understanding that our system is fucked and corrupt at nearly every level, and we say, well, what are we going to do about it? And Greg Paul, the director of the New Earth Nation, has some great ideas and an extremely positive attitude. New Earth Nation is sort of tough to explain because it's not a system itself, per se, other than to state that the individuals involved want freedom, justice, peace, and abundance for everyone, and want to implement the greatest tools we have, many of which have been suppressed or overlooked because of their empowering nature to the people rather than the power structures. So the New Earthers, they have the blueprints, a lot of guidelines and suggestions, but no real requirements to their communities. No way it's going to be, so to speak. But when Greg talks about some of the technologies and tools that could be used that we don't get to hear about that often, it really blew my mind a couple of times. I think there is a lot of great information that I haven't heard before really anywhere, and I think a large part of that is because of the circles that Greg Paul is in at the moment, but also because he's outside of the Western world and has been for quite some time. I talked to him from Bali, Indonesia, and I think getting yourself out of the system mentally and physically has effects on your consciousness that might not occur otherwise. So I really appreciate his perspective and find it a pretty unique opportunity to converse with someone who's dialed in to a much different mindset. But it comes with challenges too. The internet is not great in Bali, Indonesia, and we lost the connection a dozen times, had signal issues, had Greg change devices several times, had a really bad delay, but I have been working my ass off for 2 days trying to stitch it all together and equalize it all and get rid of all the crying children, barking dogs, crowing roosters, and random other noises coming from the tropical paradise and open huts of Bali. And personally, I kind of like hearing just a little bit of those sounds because it really makes the area Greg is in seem alive. Although not the most convenient for interviews, but I hope you can appreciate it in that sense, and in the sense that if I want to take a risk and do a show with someone in a tropical location because I think there's a valuable conversation there, it's not going to have the same polish as a guy in New York City. And I think we can all agree that it's better than not having the conversation at all. But either way, I think it turned out great, just slightly inconsistent. I'm sure you're going to love it, but we have been due for some positivity here, and it's a solid dose from the director of the New Earth Nation, Greg Paul.
Drink a little drink, my friend. Smoke a little smoke. As it looks like Mr. Cowboy is studying up this show. We're diving down the rabbit hole.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we spend a lot of time talking about the evils of the world, the nefarious elite, and our suffocation under their matrix of control, and I feel like this is an all-important step one, because with each examination of our various 99 problems, our desperation and urgency for real change becomes most apparent. And every so often when we can, I like to do a show that explores the big step two, solutions and models that we can subscribe to get out of the violent, abusive, authoritarian system we were born into, and today is going to be just one of those shows. We're talking with Greg Paul, the director of the New Earth Nation, a really insightful and inspirational guy who's really pushing for the change a lot of us are sitting around and waiting for, all the way from Bali. I know I'm psyched to have him here. Greg, my man, how the hell are you?
Fantastic. Thanks, Greg. That's quite an introduction.
Yeah, man. Well, you're worthy of it. I mean, you're doing a lot of great work. I think this New Earth Nation program is pretty awesome. You've got a great website, all the things that are necessary for people to start generating some buzz around it. And I think it's super exciting. So I appreciate you being here. I mean, these are some of my favorite types of shows to do. I love to hear about these new models rather than just hearing about the history of our economic enslavement. So this should be fun. But to start us out, man, tell us a little about your story, because I know you were a pretty successful guy before you decided to extract yourself from the system and work for something greater. So what brought you to the point of being the director of something so radically different like this?
Well, in one word, conscience, I guess. And it's not like the job I used to do in that old world, if you like, was particularly despotic. I started life as a quantity surveyor on big construction projects, and kind of went through various roles there and ended up establishing my own house building company. So we were, if you like, had a good life. There was no need to rebel from the system. It had never treated us particularly badly.
Right.
Kind of landed on our feet. But then, you know, serendipity has a way of surprising you every now and again. And it did that with my wife and I. I started, I think, with us meeting a couple of people who initially, I think the two very first things we were introduced to by this man and woman partner were chemtrails, the existence of chemtrails, and the nature of the banking system, both of which we kind of shunned like you do and the very first time you hear it. But it's all it has to do is create enough of a chink in your armor that you go and take a look for yourself. And it's the usual story. We spent the next 12 months glued for 6 hours every evening to various YouTube videos and and research papers and books on, you know, that kind of thing. And come the end of it, having discovered, I mean, for me, it was the banking system, which is really the core and heart of everything. All the other conspiracy stuff was all very well and good, but for me, it was about the banking system. That was something that you could logically look at and see the real precise pathology of. Everything else I was looking at, it all seemed to add up to a big story, but I couldn't prove any of it myself.
Right.
The only thing I could prove was that from papers issued by the system itself was how the banking system really functioned. And it's the only thing I could dissect to the finest detail. But that was enough for me to say, I just can't do this anymore. How can I, in good conscience, continue to pay a mortgage when I know that it's fraudulent and therefore I would be complicit with that fraud if I were to continue doing so? How can I continue to do any of those things that are essentially complicit with a fraudulent system, if I'm not to be the one that's actually supporting it, if you like. That's how it all started. And, you know, we all tell ourselves stories to justify continuing doing things, you know, the necessity card or whatever else. But you see, for us, we were on a very much a spiritual journey, very well deep into a spiritual journey, and to play a necessity card when it was already a living, really, at least partly a living part of our experience, that, you know, the universe life just delivers whatever it is you need and want when you need it. You know, you're on this very sacred kind of journey, that those kind of excuses don't stack up to with yourself anymore. So it really left us in a place where we just had to walk away. We didn't sell the business or sell house or sell anything. We just stopped.
Wow.
Just didn't do it anymore. Cancelled every direct debit, every standing order. Didn't go into work. Didn't go into the business. We just stopped.
Wow.
And we'd see where it takes us. And yeah, you can imagine the roller coaster ride that would take one on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fear is so strong.
Yeah, I mean, fear is so strong. But to think, it only takes one moment of courage, really, or one act of courage. Because once you've taken that, there's really no going back. And the rest of it then is, there may be a presence of fear whilst you're going through whatever that those decisions take you, but it's empowering at the same time. Mm-hmm. You start to find that some of the information that you've been learning or some of the things you've been hearing are actually, and you apply these truths to your life, and you actually see the effect and power that has over people that you used to think had a tremendous amount of power over you. That fear just falls away very, very fast. So, I mean, we were only really in the thick of that whole journey for about 3 years, at the end of which we got everything we wanted out of it. We shed everything in every sense of the word, and we're then down to building something new. And that was when I bumped into Sasha, met Sasha, who was the founder of New Earth, and got building something new, really.
Right on, man. That's an interesting story. I know a lot of people want to take that type of leap and just are held back. They're like, you know, I'm going to do it soon. I can only take so much more of this. And then, you know, 5 years goes by, 10 years goes by, life happens, and people get stuck on the teat. They can't extract. So that's pretty crazy that you did.
Yeah, I mean, most people that say, I want to do that, but right now I can't do it because. And in every one of those situations, it's because, you know, there's some life circumstance, something outside of me that's preventing me. I need to save a little bit of money to allow me to do it, or I need to do this, or something outside of myself needs to fall into place before I will have the ability to do this. And as long as anyone is telling themselves that story, they will never do it.
Great point.
You know, because it's all about you. Mm-hmm. This whole journey, where when you step on it, is just going to keep on reflecting you back to you till you can't take it anymore.
I agree, man.
Yeah. People have difficulties with stepping onto the path. It's only themselves that are holding them. They are holding themselves back. It's no one else.
Agreed. So yeah, man, we have talked to several people who have their own brands of these new societies, all with their own philosophies and varying degrees of success, but mostly being pretty similar and almost all being better than what we have now. But introduce us to New Earth Nation. What are you guys about?
Okay, well, New Earth didn't start out as New Earth Nation. It started out as a New Earth Project. So, and to a certain extent, that is still what we who and what we are. And we were really concerned with creating new models of community and society. But as the time went by, we realized that the need of the organization was actually more served by also creating a new nation, and a nation like no other. So the founding principles, really, of New Earth generally, is that when you look at the problems that affect the world and the people of the world at the moment. You can boil every single one of them back down to the single fact that we all give away our inherent power to others. You know, we will have someone else, we're happy to allow someone else to take responsibility for our education, for our healing, for our own personal circumstances, the lawyers, for to make laws and tell us what to do, because that's a lot easier. It's always, we always want someone to take care of us for us. And so you boil everything back down to first principles, and it's the fact that we give away our inherent power. Yeah, there may be a very corrupt system in place at the moment, but it's there because we permission it. And only when we really own that do we actually have the power to do something about it. Say, okay, well, I'll begin to take back power over my own life. Might be a little more difficult now because I've spent my whole life doing the other, giving that power away, and now it's a case of taking it back. But that's fine. It's a journey. So New Earth is really proceeds from that insight, and every aspect of what we do is really focused towards returning power to the individual, and to the point where that we create the space so we can really evolve properly, consciously, in every aspect of our lives and being. So New Earth Nation is what we call a extraterritorial nation for sovereign men and women. So it is the way that this nation is entered, exists, is ratified, if you like, is through the New Earth Treaty. And it's a covenant of fellowship, essentially, that outlines the basis for how we as men and women agree to conduct ourselves with each other, what responsibility we take. It's in very broad terms, just some simple truths. And that's it. That's the founding premise of New Earth Nation as a jurisdiction in its own right.
Yeah, man, I wanted to look at the New Earth Treaty in depth a little bit. Obviously, it is the core message, and it's long, too. I mean, it prints out to be 11 pages with about 86 articles to it, and it's kind of split up into three parts, so I thought we could talk about it in that way, with part one being the covenant of peace and fellowship. Pretty self-explanatory, but how would you kind of summarize that or expand on part one for the listeners?
Well, First of all, Greg, we're looking right now to take the treaty to the sovereign tribes and nations, and there's a great many of them that are kind of lining up to get involved, which is great because this is where the real safety in numbers, the real numbers come into the game for the first time in any of these initiatives. But in order to do this, we've actually had to simplify that treaty event a little bit. So there's now only two parts. This will be changed very soon. Oh. We'll be engaging with all the people that have ratified that treaty. But those first two parts are the covenant of fellowship, like you say, and declaration of unalienable natural rights. So the covenant of fellowship is precisely what it says. It's, first of all, actually the act which is founding New Earth Nation. As you can see from the language used there, the parties ratifying it. And everything that happens in this world happens because we bid it. We are the creators of this reality. And so if we want to create something new that aligns with pure truth, then it's on us to do it. So that's how New Earth Nation is built, with the will and consent, with the properly informed will and consent of the sovereign people.
Very cool. So a lot of people, I guess as societal systems go, most of the listeners here will be familiar with Jacques Fresco and the Venus Project or the Zeitgeist Movement. And I do like what I see from Jacques in a lot of ways, but how does New Earth Nation compare? Because there are some similarities, but there are also some pretty big differences. How would you compare the two?
There are some similarities. I mean, but the main differences are what the project's core drivers are. And with New Earth, it's sovereignty, individual sovereignty, and it's consciousness. It's really holding those components as the heart and core of everything. So, I mean, what the treaty actually says on our website is that New Earth's nation is founded in recognition of the primacy of consciousness, the unity of all life, and the undeniability of the individual sovereign condition. And that's it. So whereas most other initiatives are looking to change something that is external, i.e. the way we create spaces, the way we build our economic systems, our whatever else it may be, whilst New Earth is also seeking to do those things, it's seeking to do those things as a function of core purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult, you see, to change anything in this world when you're just looking outside of yourself. And we said this before. So this New Earth Nation is that marker where people looking in are really invited to say, okay, I'm going to own this. Going to own my part in it and change myself sufficiently that has the knock-on effect of the greater world. That I would say is fundamentally the difference between the two.
Yeah, and well said, because the one thing I like is the application of futuristic, efficient technologies for a more sustainable community. I love that aspect of it because there seems to be a lot of suppression in that area due to the power structure that's currently in place and their control grid, and they want to keep things going the same way. So that is the biggest similarity and the aspect of society on a global scale or a local level that I would like to see change the most.
But then there's two ways this whole transition, if you like, plays out. I mean, the fact that the world is evolving and is going to look very, very different is clearly already a done deal. But are the subtleties that belie that, are they true freedom, joy, happiness for mankind? Or are they, or is there an Aldous Huxley's Brave New World feeling to what's going on? You know, advanced technology is upon us. It's been happening every year for the last 20 years. In fact, for modern history, we've been evolving in those ways, and all these technologies are upon us. The world will look very different in the next 5 years, 10 years. It's happening anyway. But what's going to be the state of being,
mm-hmm.
of humanity?
Right.
Are we going to achieve ecological balance on planet Earth by legislation? No, because that's the whole point of the way that the system works at the moment.
Right.
Laws, ever since man first decided to implement a positive law, i.e. something that a man-made law, it creates this imbalance, that the existence of those laws creates an imbalance in natural law.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you create that imbalance, you then need to create more man-made laws to offset the imbalance that you create.
Right, yeah.
And then more and more. And it's an exponential thing. That's why in the US you have, like, I think, 3,000 or 4,000 new pieces of legislation every year coming in, because otherwise that man-made ship would sink.
Mm-hmm.
And every piece of legislation is adding to that ballast.
I totally agree.
And even if now the senates and parliaments of the world were made up of truly decent, conscious, knowledgeable and wise men and women, they would still be adding to something which is doomed from the start.
Well said.
So we really just need a new understanding upon which to conduct ourselves. And that is a covenant of fellowship. It's a reintroduction of natural law, or natural justice, which is essentially equity in the current system.
Mm-hmm.
and we cut out all the rest as considerate white noise. From there, there's the chance for the right technologies to be used in the right places to advance humankind, not to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's loads of commercial benefits to bringing new technologies to market at the moment. But that's we're still bringing things as a whole. We're still bringing things or new innovations with the wrong motivation. We've got to change the motivation.
I agree, man. And like you said about the Venus Project and the Brave New World feel, I mean, that is one of the big criticisms, is it seems like it's kind of a top-down control system, regardless of how great it is and how many meaningless jobs it might free up. It seems like kind of a dead world, at least in the weird visualizations of it. But that's a serious distinction, because New Earth Nation, on the website, there are many different sections, many different areas of community that you guys have worked out. And there are a lot of guidelines and blueprints, but they're all suggestions. And it seems very open source. And I've said before, you know, why can't people, if people want to live here in, like, here in the States, if people want to live super conservatively, why can't they go take Florida? And if people want to live and smoke weed and live in a hippie communities, why can't they take California? You know, why can't we have these different communities that allow people to live as they just want to live? And people will naturally go to where like-minded people are who share the same interests. And I think that it doesn't have to be so controlled. And I think this New Earth Nation approach is great. That personal sovereignty and responsibility aspect is missing from a lot of these systems.
Yeah, well, I mean, God forbid we end up in a world where everything is homogenized and looks the same. I mean, that would just be unconscionable to me. What we have the opportunity to do right now is free the creative spirit of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
All that creative spirit needs is a blank canvas. It doesn't need a new set of systems and ideologies. It needs new specific ways of new boxes to put things in and boxes to put people in. It just needs a blank canvas.
Mm-hmm.
We're so much more creative and capable of truly aligned creativity when we have a blank canvas upon which to draw.
I hear you, man. Well said. And so I really want to get into the details of these New Earth communities, because this is what really matters. And we have a lot of listeners that realize the system right now is fucked. They're just spinning their wheels, trying to keep a roof over their head. And a lot of them are looking for alternatives between this and homelessness. So let's kind of talk about the communities a bit. Are there any real working models right now?
At this point in time, no. We've been focusing our efforts on providing that solid base. So that is the New Earth Nation as a jurisdiction. And it's some purpose-built social networking and social tools that allow for that community creation on a larger scale. I mean, we could have last year focused our attention principally on pulling together the tools and resources we needed to build one or two communities, but that's not really following the core purpose of the project. That is just creating new models. And whilst we intend to do that, we've been more interested in at this stage is creating is providing that blank canvas.
Mm-hmm.
So that now, instead of us as a group having to act as almost a real estate developer, we now have a canvas upon which tens of thousands of community groups can come together and create their own spaces with the tools and resources that they need at their disposal. And we've provided a series of 10 faculties with the New Earth Institute who really include experts in their respective fields to pull together resources for community creation and other things, spanning the full spectrum of human life and endeavor. So we're focused at the moment really on aggregating all those resources and providing the IT platforms that really allow this to happen, because it's a connection thing. Mm-hmm. It's a community thing, and the web is the thing that's facilitated that. So I think we're expecting, certainly within the next 4 weeks now, maximum, for the New Earth Community portal to be launched.
Nice.
And that is, I mean, it's an alternative to Facebook. All of the conscious groups on Facebook have taken a massive hit over the last 8 months or so since Facebook changed its algorithms to suit commercial groups. So all those platforms that we use in the Google world just don't suit this evolutionary process. So the New Earth Community is that alternative to Facebook for all those conscious groups, and to provide the tools and resources for, you know, smaller groups of people to come together in community, common unity, to build physical, virtual spaces for their own advancement.
It's great that you're doing something more than just talking, because a lot of these systems, they get so worried about being able to make a full global switch that it never goes anywhere, and it gets stuck in this education phase. So it's good to hear that you're moving on from that. I'm curious, for the listeners who might be still kind of wondering what exactly the principles of New Earth Nation are. I mean, of course, personal sovereignty and responsibility, and getting away from control mechanisms. But I mean, is this like a traditional libertarian's paradise? Is this an anarchist society? I mean, I know we don't like isms, but I mean, there is a safety net for the collective good, for the collective need in these societies, right? I mean, is this a cashless society, I'm assuming?
Yes and no to the cashless society. We have a platform that we have developed or in the process of developing called the New Earth Exchange. And its mandate, essentially, is to facilitate the transition to a global gift economy. But rather than just espousing the benefits of the gift economy and requiring that people go from A to Z in one jump, the exchange is providing various tools and stepping stones that allow that transition to happen more smoothly. In the first instance, there's a zero-point account, which we should be launching around about the end of this year, which is really relatively simple tool, which is a mobile application, desktop application, that allows you to essentially pull all of your existing financial stuff into one place, credit cards, debit cards, and you only ever need to use one card going forward. Whole thing's managed on your own system, and you get this little card that has no names, no numbers, no anything on it. It's just completely secure, completely anonymous way to conduct yourself. So there's no real, the transactions that you make now still function in exactly the same way, but they're no longer actually being performed by the existing legacy banking system. So they're not traceable in that way.
Okay.
So it's providing that anonymity. At the same time, that same platform has built into it the capacity to conduct those same mechanisms in all forms of alternative and complementary currencies. So it's a stepping stone thing. Following that comes the New Earth Sovereign as a resource-backed, multi-resource-backed currency. And other tools that lead one from there to essentially realizing, shit, we're already gifting. We just didn't realize it. Let's drop the money altogether.
Right.
So that's the kind of 1, 2, 3 of the economic plans, if you like. But that's not to say that community groups, if they're in their own communities, if they are ready and able to let go of that illusion of money altogether, then that's exactly what they should do. Be that shining light and example for everyone else to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of the exchange is also to make life easy for those people. They'll want to become, there's this idea that up to now, self-sufficiency has meant some kind of, whatever you can't produce on your own land, in your own community group, you need to go without, or else dip your toe back into that old, trade and exchange world. So the exchange is there to soften that process as well.
Okay. Yeah, I get it's kind of tough to talk about because you guys aren't about absolutes. You know, there are no absolutes in absolute freedom. You know, people are allowed to do what they want at their pace. But I guess the philosophy would be to push towards a cashless society because that's all you really need. And I like that idea. I like a system that has both. Are you proposing people would have jobs of any kind, just working as a community? You know, obviously people work careers their whole lives for the system we have now and they get nowhere for it and they're no better for it. And how is the New Earth Nation going to approach the idea of careers and attracting currency and having ownership of objects?
Well, and you really need to address the core idea of careers at the moment. I mean, we have this idea of jobs and that unemployment is bad, but there's really no need to hold that anymore. The technology that we have allows, or essentially one brilliant mind to come up with a world-changing invention that actually takes care of 10,000 people in equivalency. And so there's no need for us to be rushing around to employ all those other people. We just need to stop being selfish and sharing. Everything's there. And if we do that, we open up more space for the rest of mankind to be even more creative and for them to do the same. And the natural abundance that flows from that kind of a philosophy is vastly more or vastly greater than that which we have now, when 99% of the population are having their creativity stifled by the need to put food on the table doing something they don't like. So I always take these questions back again to first principles, because how can you anything that we try to suggest or impose as a model, as any given model for careers or for jobs or employment, is only limiting all the things that we stand in service of.
Yeah, I definitely get that. And I'm a much bigger fan of the approach that if people were allowed to have their full creative expression, you know, it wouldn't be thought of as work. It would just be thought of contributing to the general community, because you have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of your own freedom. And with that, eventually, I think that most people would get around to giving thanks to being able to have such a system like that, mm-hmm. with a little dedication in one area or another.
Yeah, yeah. And the system is self-policing. I mean, people think that if you allow everyone to do what they want, we would have chaos. But it's not like there's no understanding at all. I mean, everyone, in order to have any kind of recognized sovereignty or be recognized as a micronation, which is what this is really, needs to show that they're able and willing to do that. They need to outline the principles upon which they are willing to conduct themselves as a micronation for other people to decide whether they want to interact with them. And so we're with that treaty, as you've seen, those principles are very small and simple, but they're nonetheless the guiding principles. Cause no harm or damage. Mm-hmm. Don't impinge the free will of others. There are one or two more, but these are principles which align with natural law. They're what your heart speaks to. If you were asked well, how you're going to express yourself in each moment, we'll always naturally comport to those basic guidelines as long as you're in alignment with who and what you are.
Well said, man.
And for those who aren't, we still, no one's suggesting that we abandon every judicial system. The system as it operates at the moment actually does quite a good job of protecting the really sovereign and conscious individuals of this planet from what it terms the idiots, paupers, and lunatics. It doesn't do it in a particularly nice way. And it does it using entirely the wrong law forms and principles, but that's what it does. It serves that purpose, and that purpose, that particular purpose, shouldn't be taken away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I know a lot of people want change. I think they're just afraid of the inconvenience of it. I mean, the use of technology and intelligent architecture to give people a high-end, like, quality of life and convenience without a lot of the sacrifices is pretty important, because I don't want to go live off the grid and have to shit in a community pot to fertilize the garden with it, you know?
Yeah, but it doesn't have to be that way. There doesn't have to be going back to... that the whole point of New Earth is to show that it doesn't have to be about going back to, you know, breaking your balls farming for 20 hours a day just to put food on the table, living off the land. We've gone past that point where free zero-point energy is now available in near infinite applications, and that alone is what can free humanity. I mean, we have now, where we had maybe a number of horses that did all the work on farms, we now have tractors that do the work of 10,000 horses. And oil allowed that to happen. But it's limited, and it's causing damage to the planet. But with one simple technology, all that can change. And then there's no limitation there. When you actually, this is just basic maths, when you apply that principle out across the whole system, if you like, it can't not make life very, very easy and simple for people, provided you make those tools and technologies accessible to all. And people also have some fear of where we're actually going with technologies. I mean, you look at a lot of the movies that are produced now by Hollywood, you know, about artificial intelligence and things like that, for example. And I actually see now some initiatives and some real big scientific projects that are actually moving towards artificial intelligence. And, you know, the first reaction to that is, shit, that's the dark side.
Yeah.
But it's not, because we're evolving as a species.
Right.
And as we, you know, the level of consciousness on this planet is raising and fast. And by the time 20 years down the line, when that artificial intelligence is at the level that folks say it's going to be right now, the level of consciousness will have shifted. It will be performing an entirely different function. And we just don't have the capacity right now to see what that is. But it's more fear to think that these things are wrong or are going to destroy mankind. Nothing is going to destroy mankind. We are the creator of this reality, or the creators of our own reality. What do we want to see?
Well said. And I did see a few mentions of, like, free energy on the site, and this is something we've done shows on before, the idea that there are free energy devices that are being suppressed. I'm kind of curious how your communities are going to go about managing the energy grid. What technologies are being proposed?
Well, there's a number of true zero point energy devices available, and a lot of which have come through to us and our science and technology group.
Really? That's interesting.
But to not delve too deep into those things which we couldn't put on a physical site tomorrow, and therefore to protect those who have brought those to us. And I can just give you some examples of really grounded technology that right now is available.
Sure.
I mean, our own, the director of our science and tech faculty is an amazing human being called Doug Lindman, who was a former NASA chief scientist, who has developed nanotech solar liquid paint. It's fully developed. It could be painted anywhere on anything tomorrow. And it's a two-layer paint system that allows you to paint anything to power anything. You could paint tarmac roads to power the cars. It's there. It's ready. To add 1 gallon of paint costs several hundred dollars to produce. It covers 20 square meters and provides 8 kilowatts of power. That's unprecedented.
Right.
Yeah, that's a whole house of solar installation for, you know, $200. So these technologies are actually here and available right now. Their feet on the ground stuff. The world can understand them and get their head around them. They're just efficient applications of science we understand today. So there's really no limitation.
Interesting. And I know you can't say much about zero-point energy devices. I mean, it is a big debate, and the safety of these scientists and pioneers is super important. But I run into a lot of people who just either don't think it's possible, don't think it's ever existed, just because they haven't seen it on Fox News or CNN. But I mean, you can confirm that you've seen some type of working model for this type of technology?
Yeah, I can confirm that a number of people in our group and team have either witnessed zero-point technology working or have developed them themselves.
Wow, that is so exciting.
Yeah, things are being cooked. I mean, these technologies have been around for a long time. Tesla pretty much cracked this a century ago. The world wasn't ready for it.
Right.
And the world still isn't ready for it. The world will be ready for it when we will only have access to that godlike power when we're conscious enough to wield it. It's that, but that everything that I've been involved in a lot of this stuff for several years now with various zero point energy devices, and the things that happen to prevent this stuff coming out, just the most remarkable and strange coincidences. It's unbelievable. It makes you laugh. It would make most people cry if they'd been working doing these things for so long. But that's
right.
Life is not ready to permit the world to have that much power right now. That's the natural conclusion. We're just not ready for it. But we're getting there.
Right.
And small pockets of people have really gotten to that space where they have the wisdom and humility to respect that kind of power and technology, and those people already are benefiting from the fruits of it.
I fully agree. From what I've seen, just online and just digging deep into the conspiracy realm, there's a lot of compelling evidence that this stuff exists, and people would be incredibly shocked to learn that there are zero-point energy devices while they're paying their utility company month after month to keep this old system in place just so their money can keep reeling in. An analogy that I like to use is I know someone who adopted some kids from a third world country, and the first time they went into a grocery store, they just like dropped to their knees and started crying. They couldn't believe that there would be a room this big just stocked with food, you know, because where they're from, that is a radically out of the box idea. And I think that the transition would be just as jarring for people if they really saw any of these technologies implemented, because we haven't updated the electrical grid. I mean, since I've been alive, I'm 30 years old, you know, we're still dealing with telephone poles and wires that are all hardlined to every house in the nation. I mean, it's time to update.
Yeah, but well, I don't know that it is time to update. I think it's time to just get rid of it altogether.
Well,
there's no reason any longer why we should have centralized distribution of utilities.
Right.
You know, if sovereignty is the goal, then individuals and small community groups need to be the ones who have the keys to the power.
Wow.
Not centralized operations. It's so much easier and cheaper that way. It's cost so much money and been so difficult to create these big infrastructures. Yeah, where I mean, right now, even with the existing technology we have, I mean, right here where I am in Indonesia, most of the power comes from diesel generator power plants. And so they pull all these big diesel generator banks into one place, generate the power there, send it through inverters where it loses 15%, send it down transmission lines where it loses another 20%, send it through more inverters, and by the time it gets to the light switch, there's only 15% of that generated power there. Now, if every home in this country had a small diesel generator that they connected straight up to their mains, and without bothering with metering or anything like that, then that itself would chop their bills, their usage, their consumption in third. So it's a massive already. It's just to keep this whole centralized distribution network we have. It's already a massive burden. We don't need that anyway. So when you bring that with new, when you bring new technologies into the picture there as well, it just makes even less sense to try and build a centralized grid.
Agreed, man. And I'm glad that you guys have secured a little bit of land. You're working towards that, working towards the next phase, because I mean, I'm just a much bigger fan of that type of approach rather than the endless education, because people, a lot of them aren't going to be convinced until they see a living, working, sustainable model. Then they can't call it impossible anymore. So, and that's a big part of the, that's a big part of the manipulation from the puppet masters also, is they convince us that these things aren't even possible. They say resources are limited, you know, it's a dog eat dog world out there, and it's hard to lie in the face of a working model. So do you have any idea how close you are to that? I know the website throws out goals of having multiple cities open in March of next year. Is that still the plan?
Underway by then, perhaps, yes. It's what we found is that it's difficult to put timelines on things. And in doing so, we've actually, in some ways, slowed ourselves down, because you create a liability for yourself that you have to try and meet.
Mm-hmm.
And that runs contrary to the way the world works. So the dates provided there are very much a guide. But yeah, we would really, we see no reason why in 6 months' time there could not be half a dozen projects physically underway. But that's a guide only.
Mm-hmm. And one more thing on that subject, there are some various locations up on the New Earth site that are, you know, pointed out on this globe image. Are those just hypotheticals, or are those concrete locations? Because my question was, there's a couple of them that seem to be within the United States, and that would seem pretty difficult to manage, I would think.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. I actually think the United States is the perfect place to run these kinds of initiatives.
Really?
Yeah.
I would be worried about regulation.
Well, I think where you go to another area of the world, what you have in America is a system that's very highly developed. Now, it's incredibly corrupt, but it's very highly developed. There are some real solid rules and precedents established, and there are people who, even to this very day, are obtaining really good judgments, even going and taking that system on smack in the face, the likes of Rod Class and others.
I'm sorry, but I did hear you talk about him before, and I'm sure most of the audience isn't familiar. Can you talk a little bit about the details of the fight he's fighting?
I can do, yeah. I don't know his story intimately well, but it's the subject matter is relatively important. He was, for one reason or another, arrested without cause and had his liberties removed, and took it upon himself to seek redress for that. And his process proceeds from the insight that every time a so-called citizen of America is prosecuted, they're actually being convicted for war crimes, crimes against the state under the War Powers Act. And so he's addressing that constitutionally. And I believe the case, he was due to have a hearing in the next few weeks, but it was being completely dropped purely because of, I think it went before some other judge or tribunal in the meantime, who said that, you know, this actually has merit. You know, I'm sure that you want to continue with this, Mr. Prosecutor. But the point is that there are a lot of people who are having similar results. These things don't get generally come out publicly because it's not in the public interest, as the system defines the public interest. Most of the cases and people I know that have had success, and I see it's 100% success ratio for those people who understand who they are. There's a litany of them. They're all over the place, and it's happening every day. But the ones that are successful are not generally fighting publicly. They're conducting their own affairs privately, and their matters are being settled, and it's happening all over the place, but it's happening privately. You can't bring truth into a public courtroom. If you do, that in itself is is viewed by that system as a public nuisance or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can understand why. You've got to put yourself in other people's shoes. Yeah. Not all. I mean, I've been in front of a great number of judges, and I haven't actually met a single one that I would say, in my experience, that I would say is undoubtedly corrupt.
Hmm.
I've met one high court judge who I would say was one of the most honorable and decent human beings I've ever met, and a number of county court judges who were all variously had some level of morality or were a little confused. But I never met anyone. I've never come across one that was out and out belligerent myself.
That's interesting. I mean, I know you do have a high understanding of law and a lot of experience and how to deal with the system. And I mean, since we're on the topic, is there any general advice you'd give to people when dealing with police? Because a lot of this natural law and sovereignty stuff sounds good, but I mean, I don't even think the police are informed. You know, sometimes there's this insinuation that the police all know these secrets and they're just keeping it from you. And if you just ask the magic questions and say the magic phrases, you can get out of a speeding ticket. But, you know, I don't think a lot of these cops are even informed to the basis of some of these things. I mean, how would you suggest people deal with them?
Yeah. Well, there's no magic questions to ask. It's a case of getting, understanding who you are and applying it. But there are some very simple principles that one can apply. And I guarantee you will never be convicted of anything because it makes you essentially unconvictable. Everything that conducts itself in that world, every charge that comes along, is contract. Mm-hmm. An agreement needs to be reached before there can be anything, before anything continues. Now, dealing with civil matters is a different thing, but when we're just talking about petty criminal stuff, or so-called criminal stuff, speeding tickets and, you know, not wanting, not answering police questions, not giving names, all that kind of stuff. It's really so incredibly simple. The agreement that you need to provide is a name. Because you have to be some kind of, you have to agree that you are something that the system can see and understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can't be. There can't be federal government versus spiritual being. It doesn't happen like that. It's versus name, and it doesn't mean that we have to let go of all these things that we use to conduct our lives. It just means we need to address our relationships with them. You're asked, "What is your name?" That's the question. And the subtleties of language and the way it's used is where the key is here. I mean, when you start to really question the very fabric of everything, you know, you probably recognize that ownership is an illusion. No one can own anything. It's a concept.
Mm-hmm.
So the very question, what is your name, implies ownership. And it implies that one who answers that question by giving a name is claiming ownership over something. It's implied there. You know, what do those questions actually mean? But if there's one simple principle that can guide you through, or anyone through, interactions with police, it's to learn the art of asking questions from a space of peace and good intentions.
I love the philosophy of it, but I just worry about the real world application because, you know, for example, if I get pulled over and then the cop wants me to sign this ticket, if I don't sign it, I'm told that right then and there I'm going to be taken in. Well, I don't have that kind of freedom. Like, I got somewhere to go. You know, I'm on the road. I need to get there. So I'm kind of stuck signing this ticket because I need the freedom to continue with my day. And I feel like if you take the route of the sovereign citizen, sometimes you're entering a lot more, you're inviting a lot more trouble into your life, a lot more hassle. Is that not true?
First of all, number one, I would never suggest you go the route of the sovereign citizen because it is by its very nature aggressive. And you're going to lose at some point. People will say, well, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. Or, no, I won't give you a no. These are energetic barriers. Yeah, when you do those things, you're actually creating a line between you and that other human being. And your only hope of really, really living this principle is when you connect with that other human being that you're engaging with. There is no uniform. It's in your head. And if you move past that idea, then the whole idea that this other man is going to cause you harm, it is ludicrous. Because he can't, because he doesn't have the power. He doesn't have any power that you don't give to him. At the same time, when we first start doing this, it's not always as clear-cut as that. We have to go through it a few times before we really start to get it. And if we are taking the stance that, well, it's more convenient to me to sign this piece of paper so I can get on my way and not be late for my meeting than it is to go through this experience and learn from it and educate some brothers in uniforms at the same time, if we're going to walk away from that life experience, then we deserve everything we get.
Yeah, that is an interesting way to look at it. Yeah, it is an experience where you can actually change the way the system has control over you.
Yeah, but you can make it. It's like if you put a child, you know, a really innocent, pure child answering police questions, they would make them look so stupid in a few minutes. Imagine a five-year-old child with no fear in a police interview. You could make a police officer look incredibly stupid. It's not him that's doing it. It's the police officer that's doing it. We have to come back to that innocence of a child. Yeah? Mm. You've got to love these people. I've had so much fun with at police stations with police officers. I've always got a beaming smile on my face. And it's not forced. I'm really enjoying myself because I know that this is my opportunity to change that man or these men's life forever. This is my opportunity to help them see the truth of who they are and the folly in the path that they've been taken. That doesn't happen from me telling them or dictating this is how it is and this is what you do. It doesn't happen like that. Happens with the simplest of questions, like you know, if you are asked for a name, just the simplest of questions, like is there a law, brother, that requires me to have a name? You know, there's one that requires, there might be one that requires me to provide one. If that's what you say, I'll believe you. But is there a law that requires me to have one in the first place? And could you show me that, please, brother? And have some real fun. I remember being on a certain matter in a police interview, and I'd had to sit in a cell for an hour to wait for this, because I'd been through this experience a few times. I asked for a Bible, something to read, and when we get to the police interview, it's Officer Dave. I've already got to know these local police officers, and we've had a lot of fun because we bring the right energy to things. He sits down, he says, Greg, why is it that you don't want to give us a name? Why is it that you're doing that? And I'd been reading through the Bible, and I said, brother, let the good book answer this question for you. And he says, okay. He says, do not give that which is sacred unto the dogs, and do not throw your pearls to pigs. And he was pissing himself laughing. He couldn't, it was being recorded by the Crown Prosecution Service. We're going to listen to this tape. So he couldn't blot out big fits of laughter, but he was laughing. He was holding his stomach and creasing himself. And just these simple things to make light of the situation, just diffuse anything. In another similar interview, they started off with very official stuff. And I just said, guys, before we start, there's something you really need to know. It's really important that you know this. And I just looked each of them in the eye and I said, I love you. And I love you. And I really meant it. And they were stumped. There was silence. Jesus, what do we do now? And then for the next 20 minutes, they sat there and answered my questions while I questioned them. It's really, really simple, but you've got to be peaceful, and you've got to really care about those folks. If you're going to be belligerent, if you see them as the enemy, you're going to get your ass handed to you. You're not going to learn anything. You're not going to grow as an individual. You're not going to get it.
Wow. That's a pretty insightful way to look at it, man, because I definitely have the wrong energy when a cop walks up to my window, and maybe I should change that.
Yeah.
Well, Greg, I think that is as positive a note as any to kind of wrap this up on. I mean, I think this has been great. It's been really informative and exciting. We've had some struggles along the way to stay connected, but are there any other words you'd like to leave the people with? Any advice on how to get involved with those already interested? I mean, outside of the treaty or anything?
We're always looking for, we have a volunteer team at the moment. Of some 300 plus people. It's quite a big operation. And there are a lot of key roles that we really need help with, key things that we really need help with. If there are people out there that feel inclined to get involved, to become involved in the administrative team for the Tribunal for Natural Justice, to help out with PR works and an IT director we're in desperate need of at the moment, a number of other key roles. If anyone has anything, they really feel inspired to contribute to this initiative and this unfolding, please get in touch with us.
You guys are on Facebook and Twitter, I'm sure, as well, right?
Yeah, we are, yeah. Yeah. But contact@newearthinstitute.org is the contact desk. Generally, the email contact desk, anyone that wants to get in touch and really support this process, it would be welcome with open arms.
Awesome. Well, people, definitely anyone interested, send Greg and the New Earth Nation social media pages your treaty declarations. And thanks so much, man. I mean, this has been a real pleasure. Keep doing what you do, and hopefully we can change the world for the better.
Oh, it's already done, Greg. See, that's the thing. You said if there's anything else I'd like to share before we go. I'm not here to change the world. This world is absolutely perfect just the way it is. I'm here to help share that realization that absolute peace, absolute joy, absolute happiness is here right now. It's there for everyone. That perfection, that heaven on earth that people have been searching for is already here right now. And all we've got to do is just turn up.
Well said. Higher level thinking, man. And I love it. And when those domes open up to the public, let me know. I would love to come out there and cover that. And I think the idea of those acoustics is pretty sweet.
Cool. Well, like I say, we have a prototype in our garden. If you find yourself passing through Bali, Greg, anytime, then you are welcome.
All right. Good to hear, man. Well, thank you for that. And again, take care of yourself. I love what you're doing, man. Have a good night.
You too, brother. Much love.
There we have it, people. I apologize about some of the hiccups, but I edited that from a solid D to, I would say, a B- quality-wise. But Greg Paul was a great guest, way more positive than I've been lately, but it's fun to talk to folks like that. It kind of rubs off on you. So if you liked the first half, hearing about New Earth Nation, personal sovereignty, responsibility, natural law, and one of my favorite sections on how to deal with police and the courts in a more effective or at least a more interesting manner, and Greg's confirmation that zero-point free energy devices are very much a practical reality outside of the grips of the shadowy dicks atop the pyramid, then I am sure you would enjoy the extended conversation about some more super interesting technologies that could be implemented for the good of mankind, details on building housing structures that use the principles of sacred geometry to have a true energetic effect on people who walk into the room, building on vortexes, harnessing this knowledge, drawing fractal energetic patterns in the desert to make it rain where it's been dry for 100 years. I mean, what the hell is that? We also talk about pricing and options for purchasing a home in an upcoming New Earth community, and I urge you, if you are interested, please sign up for THC Plus. We're just getting out of the first month, and although I have been saying 5 shows for $5, we actually squeezed a 6th one in there. So now you could cave in and support the THC adventure for $5, and you could listen to excellent hours with not only Nick Redfern, the great Robert Phoenix, and the amazing Marty Leeds, but also a dominant second hour from David Politis and his missing 411 material that I just can't get enough of. and an awkward race to the finish with Jan Ervin. But the first month of THC really has everything. And I've gotten so much great feedback. Everyone is loving the longer shows and the new site. In fact, because listeners were already logged in there, we're seeing a ton of more comments and conversations about the shows, which I've always wanted. And I always read, but I'm going to try to be way more engaged in. You also get a place in your profile for guests and topic suggestions, which most people have used. That's actually how we got Marty Leeds. I hadn't heard of him until I heard from one of the Plus members, so I'm glad we got that request. But a community is forming, and I am so thankful for that and for the support. And I hope that the free listeners will see just how little $5 a month is, and I really only get four and some change after PayPal takes a cut. But I digress. The low price is there to bring in the numbers. I don't want anyone to be denied access. And I think getting upwards of $7.50, $9 a month, I mean, that's kind of crazy. I think $5 is a barrier of entry that anyone with an internet connection and a smartphone can achieve if they make the choice. But in terms of today's show, I really liked the idea of fighting police with love rather than facing them in the streets by protesting, from the philosophy that the external world and its energies are going to be a mirror of what you're putting out or feeling on the inside, even just the intent. I think there might be some truth to the clashing of the state and the people and just how futile it really is to try and win the game that way. Maybe we should kill them with kindness. It's not what I always do, but I'm glad that other people are out there doing it, and I'd probably recommend it for you. It's kind of in line with a Facebook post I made about Ferguson, actually, that was something to the effect of, wouldn't it be legendary if protesters in Ferguson decided to break the curfew by screening Remember the Titans on the side of the destroyed Quick Trip gas station? And that is largely phrased as a joke, but the point was, how would that look on TV? How can you paint those people as looters? How can you twist black and white people sitting in a parking lot, maybe grilling, and watching a movie based on a true story that was overcoming racial issues? And Ferguson is about way more than racial issues. It's about police aggression and the general disrespect that common folks, and more specifically poor folks, get from the privileged police and the lack of consequences they have for any actions. But the point is, just instead of a confrontation with police, peaceful or otherwise, throw a party, spread some love, give them a goddamn plate of ribs and a lawn chair, and watch their brain break as these guys are ordered to arrest these people, mace these people, etc. Because when you face off against them, their adrenaline is going, they're buying into the bullshit that the common man is the enemy. But if we're really kind to them in the face of that aggression, maybe that spell can be broken. You know, maybe they'll be going home at night kicking off their boots and just crying because they can't believe the side they're working for. They now see the truth. I don't know. It's an idea. But it takes a strong-willed, higher-level mindset like Greg Paul's to achieve that. And maybe it is the mindset we need. But I'm going to shut up before I have to kick my own ass. So contribute your tunes to podcastmusicarchive@gmail.com. Tell your favorite other shows about the program. Pick up one of the amazing Conspiraties t-shirts I've designed at conspiraties.net to project these bold truths from your radiant chest. And maybe sign up for Plus and start commenting with the rest of these enlightened folks. I love you guys. I hope you return the sentiment. And I'll see you next week. It seems as if the idea that true change comes from within is today's lesson, and nothing happens without taking the first steps to action. So it's your move, audience. Your fucking move.
I smoke a joint when I wake up. Gets my mind thinking. And then I meet up with a friend. And we start heavy drinking. Sunny sand. Start having dreams.